Looking for a job isn't easy. It used to be that you could apply at a big name tech company and build a great career for yourself. But times have changed. Many of these companies have gone full woke. And if you aren't the right gender, ethnicity, you don't use pronouns, or if you're not an activist for the preferred cause, then good luck. Why would you risk your career on that? At Red Balloon, we're connecting good employees with top quality companies that value you for your skills and your work ethic, not your social activism score. Employers who post jobs on Red Balloon are focused on creating an enjoyable and productive work culture, free from divisive woke mandates. So if you want to find a serious career path without the nonsense, come to Red Balloon and post your resume today. Because you shouldn't have to choose between your job and your values. That's redballoon.work, where you can find your future.
Curriculum and children's retailers have become key battlegrounds to extend the sexual revolution. Tim and I are going to discuss why today on The Other Club.
I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word. Victory. Victory in spite of all terror.
Tim, good to see you. I've been traveling. You've been traveling. Our apologies to everybody who almost didn't make it through last week because we didn't drop a show. We're back. Welcome to The Other Club. It is our political dining, cultural dining club. And I have an apology for my attire. So does Tim. We're on like a summer garden party theme. We're totally botching this up, but we're going to bring it around in the next few weeks. This show is produced by Liberty Coalition Canada in partnership with ChristianWeek.org. Liberty Coalition Canada exists to establish Christ's justice and righteousness, help people understand what that is, and to defend those who stand. Christian Week exists to provide a practical, balanced, hope-filled perspective on national and global issues, and we are happy to be partnered with them. If you want to support our podcasting work, head over to libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate and click the analysis box. Donations submitted there go directly to Christian Week, who produces this program. If you want to help support our legal and advocacy work, head to the same website, libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate and click other designations. We really need your help to, we're taking on 3 or 4 new cases. We really need your help this summer to increase donations everywhere. You can find our shows on the Fight Laugh Feast Network by downloading the FLF app. And for those of you who didn't hear that, that is Fight Laugh Feast. And so that's a U.S. network that we're on, and we're happy to be partnered with them. Tim, over to you.
Yeah, we're excited to be partnered with them and, of course, partnered with you. We have some great partnerships on the show, and we're looking for more. If you'd like to come and advertise on our shows, any of the shows in partnership with Christian Week, please get in touch with us. But you have to ask yourself, and especially as we start off this episode on sexual grooming and the LGBTQ agenda, you have to ask yourself, who are you comfortable discussing these ideas with? For many of you, your financial advisor doesn't come to mind. But we here at the Liberty Coalition and Christian Week want you to partner with businesses that are like-minded, with whom you can be comfortable sharing your Christian faith and your worldview as you discuss your financial strategies, because these things are not disconnected. At RockLink, they are concerned with the same issues that we are, and they're willing to have open and honest conversations about where you put your money and whether or not you're on the right track to achieve your goals while not putting your values at odds with those goals. So ask yourself, are you getting that kind of level of service with your current bank, your current banking institutions? I grin because we all know the answer to that question. So give RockLink a call or an email at info@rocklink.com, R-O-C-K-L-I-N-C rocklink.com or visit them at rocklink.com. That is link with a C. So give them a shout.
All right. So, Tim, a few things have emerged and they're all dramatic. A lot of things over the last 3 years. One of the things that has really reared its dark head is the way children are being openly targeted to be vessels and converts to the rainbow agenda. And we are in the middle of Pride Comes Before the Fall month. We are in the middle of Family Month, which is a better way to frame Life Month, a better way to frame this month. But Tim, just even there, as you're talking about investors, as you're talking, you can't go into most Canadian banks without being indoctrinated towards this, these types of sexual lifestyles. Why don't you give us another few examples of the way kids are being targeted?
So one of the things that many of our viewers have noticed and are baffled by is the emergence of so-called drag queen story hour. I mean, did this exist when you were in middle school, Mike? Is this something that you walked into your public library and saw advertised when you were a young lad, even when you were raising your kids 10 years ago in that age group, right?
That's not a rhetorical question. This would have been in some form illegal when I was a high school teenager.
Right. So we've seen that. So our public libraries, which were always left-leaning, have become full-blown exhibitions for extreme cross-dressing. Moving on, we've also seen videos on Twitter, on YouTube, and so forth of young children. Like, we're talking single-digit age kids being brought to late-night strip shows and drag shows, like runway shows. Where they're not only watching, but some of them are participating. We have adults waving dollar bills as these kids are doing this. We just recently saw, we're trying to keep this episode G rated, but it's difficult when you want to survey this stuff. For some reason we're trying. We have, if you keep an eye on American current events, if you're an American viewer, you know what just happened with Target. They launched a branding campaign in partnership with a satanic artist in the UK who's designing clothing and purses and bathing suits and so forth, attacking Christian identity and, of course, promoting an LGBTQ and transgender identity. And this is going on at Target, so like this so-called family-friendly department store. Many other retailers are doing this, by the way. We've seen in North America drag queens being brought into schools to give lectures, to give talks, to meet with kids, obviously in full drag uniform. I saw a clip from the CBC, our state broadcaster in Canada, where you have drag queens sitting opposite elementary age kids to just discuss how bizarre it is that this happening and basically forcing themselves on these elementary age kids. We saw a clip a couple months ago of a Dutch reality show where so-called trans adults literally drop their bathrobes and expose their naked and mutilated bodies to young children, literally for the purpose of normalizing it, for the purpose of desensitizing and robbing children of their innocence. So we could go on, but the aim of this episode is not just to chronicle all of these disgusting events for the purpose of shock value. We have enough of that. We're at the other club. We're not a shock jock show. But unfortunately, some of what we discuss is shocking. But we want to actually unpack why this is going on. Why have children become targets? What's the role of education in all of this? We know children, one of their big priorities is education. And we do want to offer a solution for all of this. And so, Mike, just before I throw back to you, I just want to highlight the difference, like why this is so shocking as we set the stage for this discussion. And for me, the shocking reality is the willingness of parents. So we see, you know, it's one thing if you set up a billboard that's inappropriate and you're driving by and your kids are being exposed to it and you're angry about it. But in all of these circumstances, we have parents who willingly they transport their children to these drag shows, or they send them on to these reality shows, or they consent to their participation in these drag queen dialogues. So we're at a point where children are not just incidentally victims of exposure, but they are being used as pawns, as targets, as vessels for this agenda. And that's really where we want to drive into, is why? Why the willingness? Why the desire to do it? And so we're gonna kind of launch off from that. But I just would love kind of your take before we get into a bit more of the explicit demands and targets of these agenda institutions.
Well, it's very simple, Tim, that the answer why is because education is power. Education itself, the transfer of information from one generation to another, whether you're thinking about that in the church setting, which is kind of formally known as discipleship, whether you're thinking about that in the civil setting, which is classically known as education, both of those things often blur. And in fact do blur, where you have the discipleship of the home and the education in the schools, you know, there seem to be seen as partner institutions. So education is power. It's a creational structure. Information is going to be passed from one generation to another. The question is which direction is it going to go? And so I was just lecturing out in Alberta on this topic. The reason why children are being targeted is because they, the power that comes with it forms the next generation. So just a few quick quotes. Abraham Lincoln has said to say the philosophy of the schoolroom is in one generation is the philosophy of the government in the next generation. Nelson Mandela says education is the most powerful weapon which we can use to change the world. John Dewey, listen to what John Dewey said when he conceptualized education. I'm quoting just individuals who are acknowledging that education is power, Tim. I'm not quoting them because they're friends. They're just individuals who have acknowledged that it's power. John Dewey, moreover, every experience influences in some degree the conditions under which further experiences are had. So every experience affects further experience. The educator, more than any other member of a profession, is concerned to have a long look ahead. The educator, by very nature of his work, is obligated to see his present work in terms of what it accomplishes or fails to accomplish for the future. So if I can get a six-year-old to see a mutilated transgender person, I've now captured that child's mind for a lifetime. And what I mean by that is I've either scarred it, you know, that child has to deal with the image that the child has seen. The child's grappling with a new concept that child would have never grappled with in their own imagination. And that is why this is exactly where the battlegrounds are being drawn. If you think about all of the conversations going on between parents and American school boards, and then you see this all across Canada right now, where you have elementary educators, you know, some of them banning parents from making comments. We had an Ontario appeals board uphold the fact that if a Christian parent spoke their mind at a school board, it would promote hate. We look back to 2015 and 2019 and two different reiterations of the Ontario physical education curriculum, where the goal of that curriculum is to be the most inclusive in the world. We see that coming out of the Ontario government. The reason for that, Tim, is because they know that if they can get this mob of young people to be indoctrinated, and again, we Christians need to be very careful, and we shouldn't get suckered into terms like we want information, not indoctrination. All education is indoctrination. All education is power. The question is, which direction is it going?
I want to insert something. I just want to insert something right here, Mike, because you've brought up this idea of education as power. And John Dewey comes to mind, who's considered the architect of the American public education system. He said, education is not preparation for life. Education is life itself. So he's understanding, and we don't put John Dewey on our team, but he's acknowledging here that education is the fabric of life. It is the stuff that life is made out of. So even our enemies acknowledge and understand the role of education in a child's life, right? And so you are taking the long view. You are shaping a generation, and you well put that when you expose children to things that are outside of the natural development there, you are introducing disturbances, and you're introducing really reformation of their mind, of the natural order of things, and you're corrupting them to put them on a path that is alien to both their nature and to God's word. And so we are not being coy about the fact that this episode on grooming children is an episode about education. And I interrupted you there, but I want to let you keep going because you've done a lot of work in this, Mike, especially just this past week. So I don't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to put that in there, that our enemies agree on this. Those who think about it do understand that education is the fabric of life.
Yeah, we've been sloppy about it, for some time. And when I say we, I mean, I remember being a young 20-year-old thinking that, that's the same old rubbish about sending your children into a secular school system to be missionaries. It's garbage Christian thinking. And that's really what it is. There was a time when the Protestant and even Catholic arm of education in Canada partnered with the home. There was a time, but it was a short-lived time, and Christians who understood education and educational theory and taking seriously their roles as parents have been out of the public system for a very long time. And I'm very thankful for them leading the way for me and us now, promoting Christian education and promoting home education now for over 10 years. There is a problem. And the direction that the public school system is pointing these young people to is dangerous. We've got Elementary Educators of Ontario, which is a union committed to public education, and they say also social justice and equity. They represent 83,000 elementary school teachers, and this is what they've just written, Tim. Across Canada and worldwide, what we are witnessing is an alarming trend of, they say the alphabet, hate, conservatism, and bigotry disguised as concern for children. First of all, what a sentence. Wow. Conservatism placed right in the middle of the word hate and bigotry. We must not allow human rights to be rolled back, creating a safer, inclusive space. And the reality of it is, Tim, what they're not talking about is safety according to what we would define safety. And what they're not talking about when they talk about hate and bigotry is what we would define hate and bigotry. They're saying, give us license to do whatever we want with your children, which, by the way, it is towards all of these sexual perversions. And if you as a parent have a problem with that or a conservative, you're hateful. So we've gone over this enough. This is what we would call double speak, or this is what we would call utilizing political correctness. Let me read you a quote from Michael Knowles on political correctness. I think he's really helpful on this when he talks about going and turning over this. He says, traditionally, our society has frowned on lying. We have believed that the truth shall set you free. But logical rigor and consistency do not much matter when it comes to political correctness, which implicitly denies the possibility of both logic and consistency. The politically correct invert understanding. Political correctness starts with euphemisms, soft words used to sugarcoat harsh reality. But then leftists then tend to manipulate language by using vague terms and jargon, not just to soften, but to conceal and even contradict the realities to which they refer. So when they say safe, that's not just a euphemism for we want to create a safe environment, which means we don't want your kids to pull knives on each other and beat each other up. When they say the word safe, they what they mean by the word safe is we want to be able to bring an adult male dressed like a whore reading you absolutely out of reality books that don't jive with any scientific or religious belief, and I don't mean to put them in that order, but any biological statements or creedal statements, and any feedback is bigotry. That's what they mean by the word safe. So it's just to repeat it, I'm going to hand it to you right now, Tim. They use words to actually contradict reality. And that is why here education is so powerful, because it deconstructs all of these, the ability. We'll talk about yeah. grammar, logic, and rhetoric in a minute, but I want to let
there's
you
a lot, in here. There's a lot to unpack there. You're right. Education is the deconstruction of propaganda. I think that's one way that we could – that's one arm of how we could define education. But I'm glad you brought up through Knowles here euphemism, because it is the start of Pride Before the Fall month, which I've rebranded on Twitter as Life Month. Roe versus Wade fell last year during the month of June. By God's good providence. But the whole LGBTQ alphabet jihad rainbow agenda hinges on euphemism. So if you look at the way this quote gets at it really well from the Educators of Ontario, they say that there is a alarming trend of LGBTQ plus hate conservatism. You darn conservatives, there's an alarming rate of conservatism rising up, and of course bigotry. And then they talk about safe and inclusive, and these are euphemisms again for what you just described, which is a man dressed as a whore should be able to come in and read perverted books to your children without any feedback. That's what they consider safe. But the whole agenda hinges on, we've been seeing this for years now, love is love. That's a euphemism. You're not allowed to define what love is, because then you would be a bigot. So love
actually,
is love.
Tim, help our people on that, because that's a really right. that's a really powerful euphemism. Love is love. Generally, most people want to go yes, but yeah. when you say, "Well, what do you mean by that?" So give us some examples right. of how love is love would actually be absurd, and not just it would be ridiculous, and not just be like a euphemism. Looking over something.
Well, love is meant to shame people who find it unnatural and immoral for two men to be walking down the street holding hands. So love is meant to shut you up when your children look over and say, that's odd, right? Or when we drove through the Tim Hortons drive-thru and a man was serving us with a 5 o'clock shadow with painted fingernails and mascara. And I don't know all the names of the makeup, but like eyeliner and like clearly feminized. And my children go, Dad, is that a boy or a girl? And I literally turned back to them and I said, you'll have to ask me this in private. It's illegal in Canada now to ask those questions, because boy and girl is now made myth. So love is meant to shut you up or your children up when they have questions that are confronting the very nature of humanity. Love is love. So if somebody breaks into your home and steals your wife's jewelry box, and then you go to report them to the police and say, hey, love your neighbor. This is something I wanted and needed. So love is love, right? So it's ridiculous on its face there. Well, what about a man who says, I want to have a legal relationship with my goldfish, where I can leave all of my earthly possessions to my goldfish, because me and my goldfish have a romantic relationship and a trust relationship unlike anything else. Love is love. Well, it's the same premise that's applied to men sodomizing one another, because it's love to them. It doesn't matter if the Bible defines love as a lifelong covenant between a man and a woman that produces fruit of children and civilization, that's love. All right. But you're not allowed to define that, because that would exclude a whole swath of people. So love is one euphemism. gender affirming care. Okay, the surgeries that castrate children, that remove their genitals and their privates and literally mutilate them. If you don't ever look it up, if you haven't seen the scars that are left in kids' legs and arms. But so these Frankenstein surgeries are called gender affirming care. This is labeled as care. So the use of euphemism is nothing new. It's actually required in order to have a public facade of civilization to it. I mean, if people really saw what went on or what was really being affirmed when they say love is love or gender affirming care or everybody needs love, the things they're affirming are morally and naturally reprehensible and disgusting. But the movement requires that kind of language. It requires it, which is why you're not allowed to get in and ask for definitions.
And so on that point, Tim, this is kind of where I want to go with going back to the question why. So this is what people need to understand. Number one, it's a generational thing. If you can capture the minds of the next generation, you'll lead the culture in a way and with a strength to normalize what you're leading them towards. The second thing, and why this is such a tactic from the left, and we've talked about not defining and we've talked about euphemisms, is because when you think of what it is to be able to think as an individual person, to be able to live, three things are needed for you to just be able to process a thought. First is you need to be able to establish facts. So in a classical world, and we've talked about classical education, I lectured on this week in Alberta. Classical education is you teach children to memorize, and you memorize things like grammar, and you memorize history. And usually by memorizing grammar, you're teaching history, because when you think about the etymology of a word, you learn this is what it meant in the Latin or the Greek, and then you learn, oh, there's a Greek language, and then there's a whole cycle of learning that you do when you try to establish facts. So one of the tools to undermine the individual is to reject the concept of facts, to turn simple things that can be memorized and accepted as a fact into a situation where there's always a doubt and a questioning. That's a strategy. It's a tactic. And then the second area is logic, the rules of having a truthful conversation. And so if you and I, Tim, are to have a conversation about the boundaries of our property, we both have to accept the rules of the discussion and the rules of establishing truth. So scripture talks about this all in the witnessing process. Don't bear false witness, cross-examine witnesses. Justice is to be impartial. It's to be blind. And so for every conversation that we have, if we're going to have success, there has to be an honesty there. If there's one person that's secretly trying to lie or just attack you without dealing with the truth, you can't discuss. And the third part is rhetoric, where we need to have words mean what they are and learn how to then communicate. So by attacking children and by denormalizing simple things like male-female biology, what the left is actually doing is they're attacking the foundation of any knowledge, which makes the individual person very dependent upon them. Very dependent upon them as the authority. And for people who don't want to think and people who don't want freedom and for people who don't want any of those things, it's actually maybe it'll work for them. You know, you hear of people in communist China and communist Russia who would have said, yeah, it wasn't so bad. In fact, I've had that conversation in the last 2 years. And you go, well, what about anybody who resisted? Oh, it did not go well for them. So part of this strategy is to normalize the behavior for the sake of just taking that generational viewpoint so that those kids turn around and become warriors on behalf of that generation. The other thing is to force dependency. Those kids are always looking up to them saying, but I see with my own eyes that, like, I see the scarring, I see the mutilation, I can smell the smell, it's gross, it's disgusting. And they always have to then appeal back to this other elderly world authority to come and train them. Now, admittedly, it's an outer worldly authority that comes from this world and human imagination. We depend on an outer worldly authority that is the creator of the heavens and the earth and that acknowledged creation. We're both appealing to an authority. But that's why it's so powerful. If the educational model forces these kids to be utterly dependent on a few crazy experts, like absolutely lost your mind perverts, then they no longer have individual liberty and they no longer have individual freedom to actually acknowledge and go, no, that's not true.
So when you're talking about these scars, where again, this Dutch reality show where the bodies of these transgender individuals are exposed, that would have, as an 8-year-old, I mean, it disturbs me as a 35-year-old, but if I had been 8 or 9 years old and had that experience, I'd have been severely traumatized to the point probably of nightmares and probably behavioral change to try to cope with these bizarre features and the conflicting visual imagery. And that's called jamming, by the way. It is a tactic of the left. It is to interrupt your natural brain feed signals and the natural fight or flight response of humanity when we're confronted with strange situations. It's very intentional, and it's in order to interrupt the natural impulses of those children, which is probably fear and confusion. And then, like you just said, Mike, the authority slides in. The authority comes in and says, now let me interpret the facts for you. This is good. This is loving. This is affirming. You are actually a bad person if you find any of this, if you allow any of your natural feelings to persist, or if you respond to any of your natural inclinations of fear or confusion, you are part of society's problem. And these kids are just old enough to understand what it means to belong to a community. We're talking about 9-year-olds. 9-year-olds are very keen to reflect and to pursue inclusion in a community. I know because I have a 9-year-old. You've got kids just older than that, Mike. They are concerned with fitting into a community. And when the authority comes in and says, this is how you want to belong, this is how you want to be respected among your friends, this is how you want to be a nice person, you call that normal. You shut up if you feel afraid or confused. Let me reinterpret what this means to you. It's the appeal to authority rather than integrity or some transcendent standard or law.
Yeah. And again, we all appeal to authority. One can confirm reality. One denies reality. And that is the difference. The appeal to authority is that if you go back to a classical education, facts and history, logic and rhetoric, the individual is then enabled to challenge authority appropriately where falsehood or inconsistency is being derived. So a very simple example of that is you and I have this ongoing competition about who's going to be the king of nuance and who's going to be Mr. Thick. It runs with a joke of, well, which one of us is missing the point in the conversation? Like every once in a while you're talking to someone and you go, I'm talking here and you know, maybe their kids were up late last night. Maybe Tyson's got a sunburnt. You know, maybe Tyso is over empathetic to arrival times. But for some reason, the conversation is here and Mr. Thick or Mrs. Thick is down here. And grammar, logic, and rhetoric gets to say, oh, just because you're in a position of authority right now, you're being Mr. Thick. You need to come back into reality. The same is with the joke for Mr. the King of Nuance. You know, there we exaggerate for, sometimes we exaggerate for fun. Sometimes we exaggerate to make a point. Sometimes we exaggerate to make an ad hominem argument, which is a logical fallacy, to attack someone's character rather than attack their argument. And so the individual thinker can go, you're just being the king of nuance today. Like I don't actually have to, I can brush that one off because I've understood your rhetoric. So it's not, just to be clarified for our listeners, it's not that we're not appealing to authority. We know everybody's got to go to an authority, but when you appeal to God's authority, to God's word, you can turn around and you can go, yes, I can explain the changing of color of leaves because I accept the premise of design, I can't explain the science textbook, but I have the foundations to develop the science textbook. And so we're both appealing to authority, just to be honest about that. But one has to, the rebellious, perverted human being who will lie to you and then not admit it, or have all these motives in the background without admitting it, that person doesn't let you dialogue with reality and call them to account.
So as we're, I'm going to pull the conversation toward, I think this idea that you have of true education, rhetoric, and we're going to unpack that a little bit more in terms of how we pursue our way out of this. But I do want to bring you, I'm going to bring you a couple more quotes from education departments, because I think a lot of our viewers have kids in the public school system, and I want to talk to you right now.
I don't even know if they do.
Well, I'd be pleased to know if they didn't. Maybe send in your comments if you've got kids in the public school.
I think our viewers are too smart for that. Maybe.
Well, I'm gonna assume there are some.
Okay.
The U.S. Department
does.
Well, we'll have to find out. We'll see.
And people will be like, no, assuming nothing. You guys just make asses of yourselves, both you and me, all the time. No?
You don't need to assume anything to accomplish that. You don't need any assumptions. That.
Just donkeys if, everywhere.
If you're wondering, okay, well, my school, you know, I think my school still believes in just education. There's still this neutral idea of education. Or, you know, my school would never actively promote that, or, you know, surely not everyone's bought into this. Well, on a policy level, I'm sorry, this is down deep in every corner. U.S. Department of Education, that's a pretty big department. If you have your kids in any U.S. public school, this is the position officially of the U.S. Department of Education. Everyone in the school community should feel valued for who they are. Here comes some euphemism for who they are, and be free to be their authentic self. Our message to LGBTQI+ students, teachers, and staff as we begin Pride Month, ED has got your back, Education Department. So their position is this should be promoted, celebrated, and protected. Kawartha Lakes, okay, much smaller education department, actually right in Ontario, Mike, yours and my home province. Their official education policy is to keep, quote, students' identities secret from their parents, unless explicitly directed to share it. So the school is not on the side of let the parents decide. The school is not on the side of, you know, you're a boy and maybe you're confused and we want to help you get secure once again in your obvious biological reality. They're not on that side. They're on the side of let's explore, let's promote, let's protect. And by the way, they do it because it's illegal not to. Do we need to remind our viewers about Bill C-4 and what passed last winter in Canada? That it is now myth, it is declared public myth, to prefer that a person retain their biological characteristics if they are out of step with their perceived intellectual identity? Can we remind our viewers that it is illegal not to take these positions in Canada? Like, have you figured that out yet? Kawartha Lakes would be criminal to inverse this policy where they would say, this is not necessarily something to be celebrated. We need to kick this to the parents' authority. Folks, the stakes are so high right now And so much has changed that it is not a matter of preference or worldview. It is now a matter of criminal law. So keep that in mind as your kids are in the school system, and don't deceive yourself that it's a neutral space where your kids may or may not kind of roll one way or another. The school is promoting this. It is seeking out converts, and it's achieving it. It's achieving their goals. And I'm going to go to you one more time, Mike, and then I want to share Joe's quote that's going to help kind of push this forward. So go ahead.
First of all, I just want to give you a heads up that I vote against quoting Joe Boot on this podcast. I think he gets way too many shout outs.
I restrain myself pretty well.
Of course. Yeah. Tim, I'm glad you brought up this point. What people don't understand is, especially in Canada, you know, what are we going to do? All it takes is one teacher to say to a school board, what are you going to do? What's your statement? And then that school board has to go and go, Now look at the unions are all in. The unions have been fully infiltrated by people who believe that you should be doing this to children. But still, the statements that they're going to make, they're going to go buy a lawyer. And the lawyer's going to know the criminal law. Lawyer's going to say, hey, look, like, and people might say, but the law is so poorly written. Yeah, but it was passed by every level of government in Canada. Yeah, but the law has never been tried. Yeah, but it comes with a 5-year penalty. But, you know, look, the lawyers categorically are going to say, if you do anything to restrain homosexual appetite, or you do anything that is seen as conversion therapy and it's wide open, that's a criminal charge and you guys need to be safer. So number one, you've got the hegemonic power of the education system and everybody's well-being is tied to their paycheck and to their presence within the union. So you've just got this huge landslide going towards this. But as you've mentioned, it would be criminal in Canada. And so don't you think that these people are acting even in good faith? They are trying to save their rear ends, and likely if you were to sit them down on a dock in the Kawartha Lakes and sit them and say, do you think, yeah, grab a Bud Light. Do you guys, that's a joke, everybody. That was sarcasm. We continue the boycott. We continue the boycott. Most of these people, you know, and remember, we've talked about this with Josh Alexander, you know, they're just like, you got to read between the lines here, man. You just got to make it work. That's the type of stuff that's going on with our teachers. On one hand, there's a real agenda. And the agenda people know the power of education. The agenda people know that if you get kids who can't define reality, they always depend on you. And then now you have this legal aspect, and you have this, you know, just what's it called when a snowball's rolling down a hill? There's a certain amount of, yeah. You have the momentum. You have the force, the momentum of just the institution now protecting itself legally. Like, Christians need to step out of education, public education. All Christian teachers need to step out, and we need to rebuild education, go find other jobs, and then just partner with people to redefine and rebuild education, because you are being pushed in such a horrible direction. And if you go along with it, then your responsibility goes back to point A and point B. If you're going along with this as a Christian teacher, or if Christian teachers are going along with it, they are responsible for pointing the power of education in the direction of sodomy. And they are responsible then for growing up a generation of young adults who are very confused. And then at the same time, they are responsible before God for the breakdown of the ability to think and reason. All for $80,000 to $150,000 a year.
Mike, you mentioned 2009 and 2015 as the rollout under Kathleen
2015, Wynne. 2019.
Okay. And it goes back further in Ontario in terms of the sex education bill, which our lesbian premier introduced. Are we still pretending that this is just a neutral decision? Like, oh, we needed to update our systems. Like, our lesbian premier does it. And she employs a guy named Ben Levin, who is he's the architect of the education system. Well, Ben Levin...
He's the architect of the educational...
Of the curriculum.
The curriculum and the modifications and the openness and equity strategy.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Which is again, it's basically the employment of euphemism and propaganda to jam children, to interrupt their natural and moral signals, which tell them these things are wrong. It becomes a propaganda arm to interrupt that and rewire them to accept things that previous generations found disgusting. Okay. So that's what's going on in the curriculum. Well, we find out that Ben Levin, he actually went to jail for possession and creation of child pornography. And this is the guy who put his fingerprints all over the education system, the education curriculum. All the material that was normalizing this garbage was created and introduced by a guy that we find out has child porn on his computer.
And Tim,
just
hold that thought for 1 second. I just want to welcome other caveats to this conversation. We've been talking about transgenderism and homosexuality. Remember, in the public school system, you just can't even talk about abstinence to avoid STDs. So in the same way that you and I would say that young men and women in heterosexual relationships need to remain pure and protect themselves for marriage and reserve sexuality for marriage, it's the same people that are jamming the idea, no, go have sex with many different partners, go be promiscuous, and that is going to lead you to happiness. It's the same people jamming that information because they want a generation of marriages to be implode and explode and to be destroyed. So it's not just about the new stuff. You haven't been able to promote abstinence in a public school for when I was a kid, where you just, how about, no, we're handing out condoms and we're talking to people about safe sex. Well, how about the safest sex? Wait until you're married and then work on it for the rest of your life with the person you value and you love.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so the reason I bring up this old news, and this is old news at this point in Ontario, but were parents not shocked when it's like, oh, the guy who wrote my kid's textbook is a child predator? And this is, I want to set this up as context for Joe Boot's explanation, because you got to sit down and ask yourself, why would they push this stuff on kids? Why would they do it? And Mike, you just alluded to it, because they want marriages to either not exist or they want them to blow up. Why? Because that's the life they're living. They're living in perpetual guilt and perpetual shame for the lives that they've chosen. And so what do? They shovel it into the lives of children. And Joe Boot articulates it really well. And this is why I wanted to capture this. This is from a lecture he gave a few years ago. He says, the guilt that men and women face is intolerable unless they justify it. And there are only two ways that men and women seek justification in the face of guilt. The first is the atonement of Jesus Christ, where God, you confess your sin and God justifies you. He removes your sin, and then you live a guilt-free life, or you live without the shame of untreated sin. So that's the first way. The second way is to rationalize and redefine the moral order. This is where the insight is. Social justification is within reach, not before God, but before man. And so what must be eliminated is any potential rebuke, and that's what gets to your point there. What must be eliminated is any potential rebuke. To permit rebuke is to threaten the security of the rationalization that keeps personal and public guilt at bay. So you have to secure the space for the rationalization to hold. This is why Kathleen Wynne booted her husband to the basement, blew up her marriage. Ben Levin was a child predator and pervert with pornography on his computer with children in it. So what does he do? He is securing the space for his rationalization to hold. If I can pervert a whole generation of children, then I'm not the weirdo. And I'm sorry to make it so simple for you people who think that everyone's just insane. Oh, this is just insanity. It drives me nuts when conservatives call what's going on insanity, because it's not insane. It is the most rational thing for a pervert, an unrepentant pervert to do, is to make everybody like them. So there's no rebuke. There's nothing to shine a light into their darkness. And so, of course, they're going to do that. It is a total moral rationalization. And these people are being very rational and consistent with their own worldview, which is, I am God. I do what I want, but I still feel guilty. So I need to fix that. So who am I going to get to fix that? The children. Because their innocence is a rebuke against my perversion.
Yeah, and it works on a deep level, whereby then the moral codes are changed. So Joe so wisely there says the word moral order, but moral order applied equals civil law, criminal laws. So a major rebuke in society is a law.
Yeah.
Let me try to give an example of this. So it is not reality that men and women walk around every single day and you're just walking down the road and men and women just have uncontrolled, passionate, open-it sex everywhere. Now, there's a reason for that. One reason is women are not nearly as sexual as men. And so there is always a restraint out there in public because God created women differently than men. Another reason is moral restraint, people restraining themselves. Now, the reason why I'm bringing that very strange point up is they are trying to create a world where that's what you're supposed to expect. Everybody just running around aimlessly, completely out of control. Everybody wanting it. Everybody flaunting it. Everybody proud about it. And it's not the reality. Like, even in our very overly sexualized world, even in our very over-promiscuous world, that's still not reality. If a man runs up to a strange woman and attempts something, that is a problem. But it does not become a problem when the law doesn't protect the woman.
Right.
So we've talked about this moral order. Their validating of these new morals will be expressed in the new laws, which then ultimately, like with coercive, with punitive damages, eliminate rebuke. That's why Canada is on such dangerous soil, because it's not just to say, hey, get out of my face. It's to say, if you say what you just said to me, then there are legal ramifications. And so, yeah, I agree, man. I'll have to admit, it was good to quote Joe Boot on our podcast. Good to have you here, Joe. I let him in. No, it's really great, because the other side of that is to confess your sin to Christ. And that's what we call people to do. And you and I need to do it. I'm a sexual sinner. I'm just like every other human being on earth. The only way that to look at your own guilt and say, man, I lost my temper with my kids. Oh, man, I had an extra long look at that woman. Man, I covet that guy's money. I wish I could just create a law in the country that the government would have to take his money and give it to me. I love communism, so I'm coveting. All of these ways, a beautiful way to deal with that is to say, who will say, I'm going to read that. I'm actually going to, you go ahead and talk. I'm going to read how Paul deals with that in the book of Romans. You talk for 5 seconds and let me bring up the book of Romans. I'm in chapter 1 now. I just got to get to chapter 7.
Don't be naive, parents. And this is what I want. I made a hard decision with my wife that we're going to go a difficult route in homeschool. We don't quite have the money for tuition for a Christian school. We would consider that. That's a good option if it's a good, solid Christian school. But don't be deceived that this is some neutral space and that these people aren't. I mean, look at why they do it. They're doing it to protect their own guilt. And you, a lot of people tell me, well, my child is being a light in their school. They're being no, they're not. They are a sponge. They are absorbing the propaganda of the euphemism. They're being trained in the way that they think. According to Luke 6:40, listen to this. A disciple is not superior to their teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. Can you just pause and let that sink into your heart? Consider the teachers that are being paid a great money to disciple your children. Your children will be, when they are fully trained, like those teachers, like those teacher unions, like those principals, like those cabinet ministers. They are remaking children in their own image. Ask yourself, what image is my child developing into? And I just wanted to share that. Mike, go ahead with Romans 7.
No, and that's such a great piece of advice, Tim, for parents to be active. When we face these things, and you might say, man, Tim Tyso, Michael Thiessen, you guys talk against sin as if you're perfect people. No. Mm-hmm. We talk against sin in the way that
Firefighter talks against a house fire.
Yeah, firefighter talks against house fire, the way that Joe has explained it so well. We look at sin and we feel the shame of it in our own lives. We look at sin and we see the damage of it in our own lives, mm-hmm. and the lives around us. And in order to deal with the guilt that we face, in order to deal with the dangers that we see around us, we go to the atonement of Jesus Christ. So Paul has this really long chapter in Romans that says, look, is the law bad? And he goes, no, it's not bad, but the law being good stirred up in me and my evil desires that once I knew what coveting is, I wanted to do it. And so he says this. So I find this law at work that when I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law. This is that's the idea of shame and guilt, that when we delight in God's law, but then when we break it, we feel guilty about that. He said, but I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner to the law of sin and at work in my members. And that leads him to feel overwhelmed. And the answer is, what a wretched man am I? Who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So the difference between someone who is trying to redefine the moral order in order to justify their behavior, and the other person who is equally as bad usually, like struggles with all of the exact same things or the severity of the same things, but in a different context. The difference between the two is the one goes to Christ and acknowledges their wretchedness and then tries to set policies and laws that would not teach children to self-actualize, but that would teach children right and wrong. The other side of it is that to teach children to self-actualize is to deny your own wretchedness, to infer your own pride, and lead to all types of imaginative, immoral behaviors. Tim, I want to just end my little section here with I'm just going to fill in a few words. Ready? Here we go. The U.S. Department of Education tweeted, and in this case, they were talking about obesity. Everybody in the school community should feel valued for who they are and feel free to be in their inauthentic self, even if they have, even if they're 900 pounds and they will not file any dietary advice. All right, let's put it into another context. The U.S. Department of Education tweeted, everybody in the school community should feel valued for who they are and free to be their authentic self, even if they don't like Jews. Everyone in the school's community should feel valued for who they are and free to be their authentic self, even if they think they are cats and dolphins. We all know that there's limitations, and they won't admit it, but there is. They won't. You take the U.S. Department of Education and you go to the parents and you say, do you really believe that statement? There is limitations, and you have to be able to define that. First, you have to be able to acknowledge God's law, delight in it. Repent of your sin, which we call you to do. Repent and apologize. Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, and you will be saved. Then you turn around and make policies that protect kids, and you say, hey, look, you are struggling with weight, and We love you. And for that reason, you shouldn't have 95 Mountain Dews every day. That's what you would do to love your kids. We recognize you're struggling with obesity. So therefore, we are going to help you modify your diet. You would never say self-actualize until you kill yourself. Or as a drug addict, we would never say those things. But for these reasons, we do, just because it's popular.
And this is kind of my wrap-up thought, Mike, and that is to drive this point fully home. And I'm glad we're bringing in the scriptures here at the end, in order to just to show that I know they're like, "What? Can't we have all this without Jesus?" No, you can't. Sorry. We love you. That's why we tell you that. Mike, you said that there have to be limitations. Well, if you notice, when I was a teenager, I first became aware of the LGBT movement. LGBT, that's four letters. Did you see the that NDP MP announcement in Canada like a month ago? It was like the 2SPIIT LGBTQI plus. Like, there's a reason that acronym keeps growing, because they can't find an endpoint. They haven't found rock bottom yet. They don't know where this stops. We now have acronyms for pedophiles, right? Like, why aren't we there? Right. So they haven't found where this stops. They now have an acronym for so-called minor attracted persons, which we used to call pedophiles, who used to go to jail. I mean, there is no stopping point here. Right. And I just want to share John 3:19, because again, conservatives, and I know we have a lot of conservatives who are not Christians who listen to our show. We are so glad you're here. Like, we love you as part of our audience. But I want you to understand, this is not insanity. This is not people who have lost their minds. This is a spiritual condition. John 3:19, this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world. Do you want, and then here's the part I want to share. Do you know why they are grooming your kids? Here's why. And men loved the darkness rather than the light. Why would they love that? Why would you love transgenderism when it's so clearly bizarre and perverted and destructive? Why would you approve of drag queens reading to your kids? Why would you do that? It just is bizarre to me. Because they love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. And so children who are the manifestation of innocence, they are the manifestation of God's good design and hope for the future. If we destroy those, then my evil deeds might not be exposed, or they'll be at least obscured. And that's the goal. And folks, there is no justification. And you know, we all do it to some degree. I knew a guy in a marriage who he was a Christian, but he struggled with sexual shame that he had not repented of. And so he found his outlet in showing his child, his 5 and 6 year old boy, showing him online pornography. Why would you ever do that to your own child? It's to cover the shame that you feel when you haven't dealt with it. So folks, we're offering the solution, which is Jesus Christ, to atone for sin, to justify sin, so that we don't go around seeking social justification for it. Because there's always going to be somebody who approves of your particular brand of fetish, your particular sin. Don't look for those people, because you're not going to speak to them on the day of judgment. You're going to come before God. And folks, your children are a part of this battleground. So seek a future for your children where there is hope. Find and employ an educator who fears God and who fears and who respects the truth, or do it yourself, because that's the only way you know what you're instilling in them and the way you're shaping their minds. So you can do it. You can do it. And this is all connected. I want to demystify, why is this happening? I hope we've done that this episode. Mike, I'll give you the last word to wrap it up.
It's all connected. Mm-hmm. It's a strategy. I think we've revealed the three things that it does. It points education in a powerful direction towards evil. It undermines your students' ability to critically think and assume that what they see with their eyes is true. And it does so in the context of um, normalizing behaviors because of dealing with guilt in a poor way. Tim, I think we've connected all of the dots for people on this, both motive, intention, and desired outcomes. And really, I know I've heard a lot of feedback from Andrew DiBartolo taking a very strong stance a number of weeks ago on pulling your kids. Hmm. Tim, you just said, look at, you know, join a Christian school or homeschool. I'm going to go one step further. If you're continuing to send your children to a public school to be educated,
here it comes.
I would discipline you if you attended my church,
mm-hmm.
as someone who is being unfaithful. I have friends who listen to this podcast. Do that. This might be the very last podcast they ever listen to. I have friends who don't listen to this podcast. And once they hear from the friends that do listen to this podcast, I might not get any calls. But if you are a Christian and you are sending your child into this environment, you are being lazy, unthoughtful, uncritical, unfaithful to discipleship. Because
and don't be ashamed if to this point you hadn't thought about it and hadn't recognized it, because you can start this September. Like, this can start right now.
Okay, that's
right? I just want to add that.
Okay, but it's my last word, so yes, politely.
But I want King of Nuance. I want King of Nuance this week. So okay, somebody, I'm going, give me a point for that.
Okay,
give me some love in the comments.
I'm going to go for Mr. Thick then. All of the mystery has been taken away. You cannot, by their own declarations and the very little few quotes that we've given you, you cannot in your mind think that you're being faithful to promoting a Christian worldview by doing this any longer. And so for pastors who don't think about this and send their kids and wouldn't take a stance that I am thinking, you are moving ever so quickly into the realm of the false prophet who says, peace, peace, where there is no peace. So Tim and I recognize, and you know what? The leadership of Liberty Coalition Canada, the leadership of you know, we might have a few of these in the future. We might have a Liberty Coalition USA. We might have a Liberty Coalition Germany. We might have different church groups working together. We talked about this. We're the tip of the spear. We're the sharp edge of the knife. We are the troublemakers of Israel. Where I know sometimes listening and sharing this stuff makes you feel like a troublemaker. It is because a hardened, systematic, from top to bottom, cohesive plan has been to undermine you and your family. And the only way to do that is to shake so thoroughly away from it that you get accused of being a troublemaker. So join us, become a troublemaker. My wife just literally put a t-shirt on the table in front of me, pro-life, pro-gun, pro-God, pro-America. Be a troublemaker in the positive sense where you go, yeah, that is me, in the line of John the Baptist and our Lord Jesus Christ. And with that, Godspeed to you as you fight another day.